Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. This week, I've got a very special guest on the program. She and I go back a number of years. Our paths have crossed at various different junctures, and it's been really exciting for me to see how her business and her branding has grown. So the person I'm interviewing today is none other than Stephanie Taylor, who is a property investor, co-founder of the award-winning property management and development company HMO Heaven, and co-founder of Rent to Rent Success. And I'm sure you would have heard of her, and of course, of her sister, Nikki, who is also her business partner. Together, they've grown their property management business quickly and bought their own multi-million portfolio of multi-unit blocks, commercial properties, along with HMOs. She was voted Inspirational Person of the Year 2021. She's also been featured on the BBC, Entrepreneur, Business Insider, and The Telegraph. So a long list of amazing accolades. She's the author of the number one best-selling book, Rent to Rent Success, and she also hosts her own podcast. In fact, the Rent to Rent Success podcast is in the top 1.5% of podcasts. So she's done incredibly well. And I have to say, I'm really honoured, Stephanie, to have you here today. Thank you so much for being my guest today on the HMO Success podcast.
Well, I'm really honoured to be here, Wendy. I have also admired you from afar as well. And I often listen into your podcast and get new insights and ideas. And I was telling you when we met at the HMO Awards that I was particularly interested when you had your chat in about trust and so on, because that's something that we're looking for when you become a property investor and property owner. These are things that you need to start thinking about that you may have had no idea about before.
Yeah, so true. It's the long-term exit strategy, isn't it, for your portfolio? You first start off thinking, how can I get going? How can I find my first property? How can I utilize the capital that I've got or that somebody is going to lend me to get going? And then you think about growing. And then you think about dying. Yeah. And yes, it's funny how your attention moves through those three different phases in property. But let me start a little bit further back, rather than looking so much to the future and what's going to happen. When you shuffle off this mortal coil. Could I turn your attention to the past? I'd like to understand, Stephanie, how did you first get started in HMOs and in rent to rent?
Yeah, well, I think like many people, Wendy, when I first came into this property investing world, I was absolutely blown away. I was almost, my head was spinning, thinking about all these different things that people are doing that I had no idea that, in inverted commas, an ordinary person could do. So, of course, growing up in the UK, you're aware that people invest in property. It's something that people often talk about. But I wasn't aware that it was accessible to me and that it was something, again, I thought of myself as not a business person, investor, etc. I wasn't aware that it was something that I personally could do. And what happened was my mum got ill. And there was a particular moment, I think we all have those particular moments in time where it's an ordinary moment on the surface, but something shifts inside. And then that is your moment where you realize that what you've been doing is fine, but you no longer want to be doing it. And so my mum got sick and called me for a bit of support, encouragement, and everything's going to be okay, at a time when I was getting ready for work. And I was very dismissive and tried to dash her off the phone, such that by the end of the call, she was sort of apologizing for calling me and disturbing me. And she didn't usually call. It was quite early in the morning. We usually speak in the afternoon or evening. And it was only when I was reflecting back on that, after I was patting my back for doing so well on this presentation that I was dashing off to, and And I just thought of her waking up, reaching out, just needing someone to say, it's okay, Mom. She wasn't feeling very well. She's on her own. I'm here for you. Just listen to her for a few moments. That's all she needed. And I was not there for her. And that started to really haunt me. And it made me think about my life, what I was doing, where I was working. And this one thought came up to me. The bank would have been absolutely fine without you, but your mum wouldn't. And I just really felt the truth in that, which is something we all know. It's not anything mind earth shattering. But I actually did start to think, right, I was at the time mid-40s, and I thought, I'm going to change things. I know that some people don't work in a job. It was pre-COVID, so it was most people did not work at home in my line of work, which was banking at my level anyway. And banks were very keen that you were there in person at that time. And I thought, how could I do something more flexible? I knew it was something to do with business, which I didn't feel confident or clever enough or whatever. I thought that these business people were very special, but I thought perhaps I could do something in property, because I knew that ordinary people that bought property and accidentally become much better off, or millionaires, let's say. And I thought I could possibly do that. I started going to the events, Wendy, and that was when my mind was blown.
Amazing. So it sounds like you had a number of different factors that really lined up to push you in the direction of property. There was a personal sort of epiphany almost, where you realized that, you know, your life and what you had to offer was much more than just swapping your time for money. And as you say, the bank wouldn't appreciate everything that you were going to give them, but maybe you could put the same effort and time into something else that would give you, you know, a different lifestyle. So you did have time for the nearest and dearest around you. But it sounds like you also were at the point in your life where you were actually ready to make a change as well. So what was your first deal? How did you actually get started on this amazing journey of growth?
Yeah, it's so funny, because it really isn't a journey of growth, because I was so shy in the terms of the idea of going speaking to letting agents and landlords and things like that. And as I said, I didn't feel I had the confidence. But I think just, Wendy, that real fire lit in my belly, and I realized I'm at a certain age. I've maybe had these little sparks of ideas in the past, but always suppressed it. And I thought, it's now or never. If it doesn't work out, I was so worried about doing it. But then I just thought to myself, if this doesn't work out, you'll be no worse off. You can just go and get a job. Even if I'd spent some money doing it, it's no different than spending money on an experience such as a holiday or whatever, and knowing you've done it and, you know, you've tried. So I just decided to go all in. And even though my natural inclination is not to put myself out there, as we say it, I started looking online for the properties, and I started going to viewings, and I was still working full time at the time. And one particular Saturday, I was living in Bristol, and I'd come across to Newport, and I looked at all these properties with an agent, but I said the wrong thing. I said something to imply that I wouldn't want her to manage them anyway, which is obviously the wrong thing to say. And she totally naturally, I mean, I don't blame her, switched off from me at that point. And she had been driving us around to all these HMOs, and then we were coming back, and it was felt decidedly frosty. So I felt really shaky getting out of the car, that I'd done it all wrong, and I'd really upset this woman who'd given up her Saturday morning. And I was there in Newport on the High Street, where a lot of the letting agents are, and I really wanted to go home and lick my wounds and think to myself, oh, you're so stupid, or whatever I was thinking. Not a bit complimentary. But I thought, you know what, you're here. And because I lived in Bristol, I thought, I'm here. I really ought to go in. And there was a big high street chain on the corner, and it had quite a big frontage, and it was open, and I was standing quite near to it. And I must have stood out there. It felt like I was standing there for a long time, just shuffling my weight from one foot to the other. But I did make myself go in, and I was so proud of that. And I made myself go in, and I asked in a very squeaky voice if they had any HMOs. And the woman who turned out was the manager of the this branch said, no, they didn't. They couldn't do this. They knew what this was. They couldn't do this because of their HQ and they wouldn't like it and they would need sealed contracts. And this is, and I said, I don't know where it came from. Well, if they wouldn't do it, I can totally understand that because you don't know us or anything yet. But would they consider for any of their tenant find only landlords? Because then the landlord can just make their decision and the agent obviously would still get paid from both sides. Anyway, I don't think I said the bit about getting paid from both sides. But anyway, a light bulb had gone off and she'd started shooting me towards this big screen with all the properties on. She had two HMOs that were doors away from each other on the same street, which I find often landlords have two in that manner. But anyway, we went and viewed them and those turned out to be the first two.
Amazing. So these two properties, what were they like? Can you describe them to us? Yeah.
So there were basically a 5-bed and a 4-bed HMO, kind of your bog standard. I think a typical HMO in this country is a 5-bed with two bathrooms, yes. And it had the lounge turned into a bedroom downstairs and a small single downstairs and then the 3 bedrooms upstairs and another bathroom upstairs. And kind of a bit tired, but they'd been well loved, but they'd had quite a bashing in a sense. And when I say well-loved, I mean the landlord was an old-school landlord. He'd first started off in landlording in his late teens, early 20s, didn't have a lot of money, but he was he worked in not construction, he was an engineer, so he was quite handy. So we used to do the places up over the weekends, set them up as HMO, had them for many years, didn't need the money, Wendy, because he loved his job as an engineer, had a family, no children. Had his, you know, wife and whatever house they've had that they loved. And his biggest problem was all the tax. So right. He just wanted to know, he had a handful of HMOs and he just wanted to know that they were all looked after. So I didn't think we were going to get these properties because they'd originally been on student lettings at over £1,000, £1,400 for one, I think £1,100 for the other. And at the time when we saw them, I think they were on at £800 each. And we offered £600 each. He accepted.
Well, there must have been something about you that maybe made him think, I can trust this lady. Yes. She's going to do a good job. Yeah. And sometimes you can be right with all the maths, can't you? You can be right with all your figures. But what you can sometimes underestimate is the power of your integrity. And the power of your personality and your ability to transact, which is above and beyond a mathematical or monetary transaction. There's an interplay, isn't there? There's an interpersonal issue or a contract going on, which is sort of a little bit we don't often talk about that, but I think that's a really important part of who you do business with ultimately.
Yeah, and we were so green, Wendy, and we had our clipboards and Nikki and I were both there together and it was the landlord who's kind of old school, quite laid back, but on the ball when it comes to his properties, don't get me wrong, and the agent who's, as agents always seem to be, very smartly dressed, etc., young guy. And so we're there with our clipboard saying, oh yes, Nikki, we would change the carpet, wouldn't we, Nikki, and we would do this, wouldn't we, Nikki, and we would do that and we would do that. So he could just see that we were keen as mustard. He said later on, years later, because we still manage his properties today, that he didn't know if we would last because we seemed so green.
Well, now he might say you seem so pink.
Yes,
that's just
yes.
Because of the brand. That's a whole different issue. Yeah, Barbie's got nothing on you, Steph.
Exactly, exactly.
So that was great. So that must have made you feel a bit more confident, a bit more like you had you had something to offer to local people and that you'd found an area that you could work in. And you're working with Nikki at this time. How has the relationship with Nikki grown and developed over time that you've built your business? Because that's, I think, quite an interesting dynamic to have two sisters working together.
Yeah, we're very different. And we did used to get on each other's nerves. Well, she's always gotten on my nerves, let's face it, from the beginning, because she's always tends to be very detail oriented, asks a lot of questions, which I think are unnecessary. And but somebody's got to do the contracts, Wendy, and the accounts and all the legals, and ask questions of different people we're working with that I wouldn't ask. So I feel that I love her more, respect her more, and appreciate her more since we've been in business together. And I think over time, when you're in business with somebody, you have to be honest, because often as humans, we don't want to tell people, do you know, when you do that, it really irks me. Or can we do it this way or that way? And I think we've become much more honest with each other, and we come to an understanding where we appreciate that the other one is how they are, and we each do what we can to help them be the best they can be, and help ourselves to be the best we can be. That makes us sound very uppity, but not uppity. but we don't always get it right. We do sometimes have fallings out, disagreements, but overall, we love each other and we want the best for each other.
And it sounds like you appreciate each other's differences, but you've also been able to find a way of working together so that there's enough of similarity of vision and purpose that's enabled you to say, okay, you have that role because you're good at that. I'll have this role because I'm better at that. Mm. And if we have different disagreements and differences, well, we've just got to sort them out. We've got to take time to discuss them and compromise.
Mm. And it sounds a bit like you and your husband, because I listened to some of your podcasts where you said, he, from memory, is the more detailed one.
He's the Nikki and I'm the Steph.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, I read a book, a really good book, a few years ago. And I can't remember what it's called. If I remember it, I'll put it in the podcast notes.
Is it The Visionary and the...
That's it, exactly. Yeah. It's about the visionary and the integrator. I think he used the word integrator. So the integrator is the Andy, is the Nikki, is the person who, you know, actually implements the plan. Yes. But the visionary is the one who goes, let's do this. Why don't we do this? Hey, this looks like a great project. And, you know, the visionary drives the integrator crazy, because the integrator's going, hold on a minute, where's your due diligence checklist? Has that been completed? And where's the spreadsheet with all the numbers and figures on it? And you as a visionary are going, No, you really don't understand. That's not the point. I mean, yes, I can do all of that. Of course I can do all of that. I just don't want to do all of that because I'm onto my next big idea.
Yeah.
And that's what the entrepreneur is like, or the visionary is like. Yeah. And it's those two roles. And you need those two roles in a business. I have to say, I can relate to your partnership because, with me and Andy, he's very much the one who implements my big ideas. Mm. But without my ideas, we probably would grind to a halt, because he would get so embroiled in all the nuts and bolts and detail that we would never go to the next thing. We would never try the next idea, or, you know, go for the next step in our vision. So, great. Now, Steph, you're very much a people person. You've got great people skills. I think you read people very well. I think you've got very good insight into the way that people work. What is it, in your experience of working now with many people, training them in your rent-to-rent success model, what is it do you feel that is the biggest block to people developing a profitable rent-to-rent business?
Yeah, it's the same, Wendy, for anything we want to do new. And you've experienced this yourself. And I go through this myself whenever I'm doing something new. It's that your brain will tell you that what you've done in the past is all you can do. And it will seem as though it's the truth. You can't do this because you don't have this experience. You can't do this because you don't have these qualities that the people who are successful with that have. And all of those things may in actual fact be true. But to be successful, you have to believe that another reality for which there's very little evidence is also true or possible. So at the beginning, and this is a struggle for me, as it is for many people, is to believe I can be successful in property. Or I can do this, I can get the property, I can manage the property, and so on. And the sub phrase that I used to add on, if I found it too hard to believe, was, I can learn how to do this. People learn how to do this, and I can learn how to do this. So I think...
Yes. So what you're suggesting there is that actually it's about mindset
Yes.
Much more than about skills.
Yes.
And that people who come into this and get stuck in that rut where they say to themselves, oh, I don't know how to do this, and therefore I can't do it. Mm-hmm. What they need to realize is that we've all been in that sort of starting position, haven't we? You started when you were wavering on the corner of Newport and the High Street. You know, should you go in and speak to the estate agent? Now, what if you hadn't had the courage at that moment to do it? And it was the courage that you showed that if you like bubbled up within your spirit to say, well, I'm here now, I'm going to have to, if I go home now, I'm going to kick myself for the rest of the afternoon that I haven't really, you know, made the most of this opportunity. So I've got to find the courage to go into the shop, speak to the lady. And of course, hey, presto, look what happened.
Yeah.
So mindset, it's clearly a very, very important aspect, I think, for anybody wanting to develop a property portfolio. I think that's great. That's a very good insight as well. I loved what you just said there as well about believing a new reality, that you have to step into that, and that you have to decide that you're going to create a new mental reality, and then you're going to manifest that, and it's going to become a physical reality. And too few people go through that process. Maybe think it's all a bit sort of woo-hoo. Yeah. But it's very much about that the whole time when you're running a business, I think.
But the things we succeed in, we do that. We don't maybe consciously do it. When you're learning to drive, there comes a point where you can actually see yourself as a driver. It's maybe not a conscious thing. But if you can do that from the start, like you're a runner, Wendy, which I find absolutely bizarre and mind-boggling. But anyway...
You're a runner. So do I sometimes, I tell you, and I'm out there thinking, why am I doing this?
You run marathons and so on. And it's a bit the same with running, that you have to start to see yourself as a runner. That has to become part of your identity. And then the actions that come from that are so different to those if you don't see yourself as a runner. So if you see yourself as a property investor, if you see yourself as having the ability to learn things and be successful, and whatever rung on the ladder you are, because I think the thing is, people look at the top of the hill, for example, people who've amassed, like yourself, a big portfolio of owned properties, properties that you own and manage and so on, and several other successful businesses. They look at the top of the mountain, they think, oh, I would never be able to do that. But you got up the mountain one step at a time. And there was a moment in time where you stood there and also didn't know any of the things, or many of the things you know now. But we all know, wherever we are on that stage to the top of whatever mountain it is that we're trying to climb, we always have exactly what we need for the very next step on that journey. And that, you know, that slight edge principle from that book, The Slight Edge, that's so true, that if you can just make yourself take the next step, and then the next step, and then the next step, and then once you're partway up the mountain, you can see new things become true for you that you would never have seen from the bottom before you start. So you have to start before you have all of everything you need.
How have you created and developed your own mindset then, Steph? This is obviously a woman speaking now out of experience, a woman who's speaking from having had some challenges and difficult times. What has helped you to be able to speak now with such courage and conviction about that kind of area of life?
Yeah, it's so fascinating, Wendy, because I would have been so dismissive of all this mindset bump. Couldn't understand why people were spending so much money investing in coaches. But honestly, the number one thing that will determine your success, as we've talked about, is your mind, what you believe about yourself, your ability to be your own best friend. Because sometimes if you said, right, there's somebody who's going to be with you 24/7, and they're going to support you in everything you want to do, all you have to do is let them know what you want to do, and they're going to be there 100% for your support. They know you better than anyone. And then that person who's your number one support is constantly dragging you down, reminding you of all your failures, saying you can't do it. You would obviously sack that person. But people can probably recognize that's what most of us do to ourselves. Very human and natural to do that. So how I got out of it was I started to see, as I was progressing with property, that I was doing things that I never thought I would do. And I thought, oh, how's this happening? And I realized it was because of the mind. It was all what I was thinking. It made me realize that I would have had the potential to do this 10 or 20 or more years before I did, because I could have always learned what I learned. And so then I started putting focus into actually having coaching, learning coaching. And when we're teaching people how to do rent-to-rent, the strategy or the next step is a simple step. But yes, the people's willingness to do it was really dependent on the mindset. So when we could help people, first of all, with their mindset to get that belief in themselves, and not a fake belief, something that they can't believe, but a real belief, like maybe you can't believe I'm a multimillionaire property investor. That's too much for most people. But maybe you can believe I can learn. I can find the first property. I can go all in on this. Or I know I can be as successful at X specific thing. Whatever you can actually believe is what's going to move you forward.
So you obviously have gone through that process yourself through coaching and mentoring, mm-hmm. and have obviously seen some significant growth. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, many of us want that to be able to translate into tangible results. Mm-hmm. Because it's all very good and well to, you know, feel amazing in your mind and in your emotions. But ultimately, I think for many of us who are in property, we're balancing that the mental growth with also looking at the bottom line. And at the end of the year, when we look at our accounts, saying to ourselves, has my balance sheet grown? Has my net profit grown? Am I actually making more money? Because there's in my mind, there's no better measure of growth. And I often see with people that it's a little bit exponential. So it's not linear. You might spend the first year and it starts at zero and it might end at negative zero. You know, you might be negative at the end of the first year, maybe even at the end of the second year. But if you just keep going, mm-hmm. you will find that your growth will start and it will keep growing. And then you suddenly find that you hit this, you know, amazing exponential moment where actually it's growing far faster than you could have ever predicted. Have you seen that too in your own journey?
Yeah, and I think the other thing is not to just focus on your mind. So we were doing this as we were trying to build the business and getting scared and taking on more properties and seeing the money coming in, seeing success start to happen for us and feeling, oh, this isn't who I am, and feeling slightly unhinged. And that makes you kind of want to stop and pull back and go back to where you feel comfortable and to keep. So the coaching comes alongside the action to the event. And I think when you feel strong in your body and your mind, you will create whatever you want to create. So if you want to create more wealth, which many of us do because we want that time freedom, you will create more wealth. But I'm very keen, like probably yourself as well, is that you've got to take action towards the things. And the mind work comes alongside whatever your goals are. I just think I've got a little mantra, believe bigger, be bolder, be a game changer. Because the first thing we said is, number one, it comes from the belief, the ability to believe that more is possible for yourself than you're currently achieving. If you want to achieve a new goal, you have to believe in it. You wouldn't have had that thought, I want to achieve a new goal, if you didn't believe to some degree that that's possible. So it's just to lean into that belief and actually use it as a practice, like on a muscle. You get better and better at believing in yourself, supporting yourself, being that own best friend that's with you 24/7. So that's the belief. Then the be bolder is it's scary. It's scary for so many reasons. And whatever your past is, whatever challenges you've had in the past will be haunting you and saying, well, you remember you failed at that at school. Remember when you tried to do that at work, or remember when so-and-so people criticized you. So be bolder is just being able to stand with that, with the discomfort that people will criticize you, because people will criticize you whatever goal you have, whether you decide to do nothing or whether you decide to build a fortune. And so to get criticized on the path to what you decide that you want. And be a game changer is really, you know, when you start to achieve things for yourself that you did not think you could, you become a leader in your own life, your family's life, the people around you. And also you're able to give at a higher level or a different level financially to others in your community and around the world as you so choose. And it feels phenomenal to be able to be a giver of support rather than always to be a recipient.
What's been one of your best deals, Steph?
Yeah, well, the best deal, I think, is I love rent-to-rent, and I think it's great for some people for getting started. You do need time to be able to manage the properties, and our best rent-to-rent deal was our third one, which was an 8-bed HMO, and the guy in question was losing about £1,000 a month, and when we came in, we just changed things and ran it better, and he was making over £1,000 a month, and he came there and he said, I did not realize how it was weighing on my mind, and really bringing him down, you know, and he was married, and you can imagine the conversations as well within the family. And we managed that property until he sold it, and he'd wanted to sell it for years because he bought it at the height of the market, couldn't sell it because it was now negative equity, couldn't rent it because it sort of slipped into bad condition. And we were able to go in, help him to refurbish, you know, say, just do this, this and this, and then we'll manage it for you and pay you the guaranteed rent. And it was just a really good solution for all concerned.
So it must give you an awful lot of satisfaction when you can see that what you're doing is not just helping put money in your back pocket, but it's also helping put money in somebody else's back pocket.
Yeah, and people often criticize online and say we're just taking something away, but actually most times we're there because there's a problem and we're adding value. We're making the property itself more valuable by what we do with it than whatever was there before. So yeah, we really think that in terms of a long-term business, you've got to have something that's a win-win-win. You might be able to rip somebody off once, but they're not going to come back a second, third and fourth time. So we think that's really important to have that ethical approach, and to have something where the landlords are delighted to work with you as well, and they're recommending you also to their friends.
Yes, I think that's incredibly true. And of course, it's ultimately about your reputation as well, isn't it? That your reputation goes before you. So you want to make sure that what you're doing day to day is building your reputation and not destroying it.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Wendy, we've got a team, a small team, and mainly Luke, who's our property manager. And I remember a time where I thought, oh, nobody's ever going to be able to manage these properties. And we dressed them in a certain way, and I did things in a certain way. And I thought, oh, it'll just be a nightmare. I'll have to do this forever. But we got Luke, and he does an amazing job. And now he asks people for the Google reviews. And we've got, he was so delighted recently. We just got to 100 five-star Google reviews for HMO Heaven. And anybody in lettings will know that it's more challenging to get a positive review, because if people are happy, often they don't need reviews. And if people are not happy, then they're more likely to, perhaps. So.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's great. What a great achievement. Well done to you all. That's amazing. In terms of people getting started with rent to rent, what advice would you give to somebody who's perhaps considering this, perhaps alongside buying an HMO portfolio, but maybe they've met a couple of HMO landlords who, like the landlords you've met, may be a bit reluctant to sell or perhaps can't sell, but they would like to find a way of improving the return on their HMO. Could you give your sort of top three tips for somebody wanting to perhaps get into rent to rent?
Yeah, I think it's great for both people. I mean, we often focus on people who have never bought a property, but also we've got a lot of people in our community who've bought HMOs and are meeting lots of other HMO landlords. And so it's great for them to be able to do rent to rent. So the tips that I would give are, number one, know that managing a property is not a hands-off strategy. So if you're wanting a hands-off strategy, it's the money, time, knowledge thing. You need, usually for a hands-off strategy, you'll need more money, and then you'll be able to put in less time. Rent to rent is a strategy where you're starting off with less money, but you put in more time. And so I think just know that you will be managing a property. But instead of putting in, say, 50K or more buying an HMO, you'll be putting in, sometimes it can be a few hundred, sometimes a few £1,000 to rent the property and then make the money. So what you're looking for is, the next thing is to tell everybody what you do, So know that you will have to make a time investment. Tell everyone what you do, especially if you already have HMO interests, as people may do listening to this podcast, because there will be people. HMO landlords are always looking for long-term, consistent, high-quality management because it's so rare. And that's what puts you in a great position if you are able to offer that. And the third one, I think, is to, the same for in any business, just to keep going, because once you've got it for the first one, the second, the third and the fourth are just so much easier.
And obviously, learning from somebody like yourself who's done it, you've got lots and lots of materials that people who are interested in can access. And I'm going to obviously give them access to your, you know, your fabulous website and the information and so on that you give, and your book as well, Stephanie, which really outlines the way that you've done it and how other people can get started. I think education is critical, isn't it, to be able to understand how to do it. Again, it's that little voice in your mind that says, well, I don't know how to do it. Okay, you can learn how to do it. And in many ways, it's probably not the how that's actually the challenge. It's the whether to that's the challenge. It's when are you going to take action? Quite often I say to my mentees, you have to get clear with your diary. You have to start to be honest with your diary and say to your diary, right, diary, when am I going to prioritize this? It can't be just fitted in at the end of a day when I'm tired, I've had a whole day at work, the kids have been niggling me, I've had lots of chores to do. Oh, right, now at 9:30 at night, I'm going to sort of jump on Rightmove and start to write to investors. That's not the best time to be doing it. You've got to find a time during the week when you're going to set aside that time and actually make it a priority, because this is a new business that you're launching. And so you have to sit down with your diary and let your diary speak to you. And if needs be, start to delete some things from your diary so you have the time, because we only have 24 hours in the day, any one of us. But those are some great tips. So looking forward, Steph, to the future, you've built this, you know, amazing property portfolio. You've got a business now that runs itself. You've got a team around you, which is fantastic and gives you the support and the practical help that you need. And you've also got this amazing program, Rent to Rent Success, that anybody who's interested in learning about Rent to Rent can come on and learn how you've done it and implement it themselves. Where do you see the next steps for you? Where can you see that going?
It's a great question, Wendy, because we do this because we want to... What you said about the calendar is so... important. We do this because we want time. We do this because we want the freedom of choice of how we spend our time. So how we can look at what our values are is when we look at our calendar, as you just suggested, when we see how we spend our time, we're literally spending our best resource, our limited resource of time. The average person is 4,000 weeks. Quite a short time, that's 77 years. The longest lived person lived for 6,000 weeks, 125 years, 6,000 and odd. So I think it's so important to be clear on what your values are and what you want to spend your time on. And so I looked at that for myself. And I first of all, my health is one of my top values. Wealth is one of my top values. Love, growth. So with health, I had let myself become very unhealthy. This was before I started in business. But as my mindset started to change around business, I thought it's all transferable to all the things where I felt out of control or not in control of my eating or my exercise or everything like that. I was able to grasp hold of. And so what I'm not answering the question. So,
it's very interesting, even if it doesn't relate to the question, by the way. I'm still learning a lot, just you rambling. I'm quite happy for you to ramble.
Okay, well, so what do I want in my life? So what I want in my life is to live a healthy life, which I regard as just having some time, which is not about an end product, which is just enjoying being alive in whatever moment I'm in. Whether I'm just walking, whether I'm with other people, just being totally just enjoying the wonder that we are on this earth at this moment and not thinking about, oh, I should be doing this, I should be doing that, I should be doing that, because some of it is just that the time can pass and we can just enjoy that part of our life. And then the second part is to have the goals. And the goals for me are about, for many people, traveling more. But growing my business is something that I get immense pleasure from. And growing the property business, I did start to wonder, what is the point of owning all these properties for me? Because I have one son who, thankfully, he's bought his own properties, investing his stocks and shares, and I know that he'll be fine. I'll leave him a small amount of what we have. And what's going to happen to the rest? Nikki doesn't have any children. And so we started thinking about a trust, and I like the idea of an accommodation and education trust. And the education part is to teach people how they can, you know, achieve the dreams that they want for themselves, both financial and otherwise, you know, some of the mindset things that we talked about, because people might not realize that, like I didn't, that everything is available to you. And the first person you have to enlist is yourself, your best friend that's always with you 24/7 to encourage you. So I think, to come to an end, the things that I really want to do are set up that trust. That gives me joy. I want to travel, and I want to continue to work, grow my business, grow myself, and just enjoy this life that we've been blessed with.
Fantastic. Well, I also think, before we even started to record this podcast, you and I were having a very interesting conversation about AI. And you know, that's going to provide us in the industry with some very interesting opportunities and challenges. And I could see that it's something we're going to have to consider. We're going to have to think about, how does this fit in? How can we use AI? How can we help? How can we make AI work for us as we move forward? And I'm sure, you know, that's something, as we sort of briefly discussed before, that would be something sort of on your radar as well. You have a lot of energy and focus, Steph, and I think a lot of people can learn an immense amount from you, not just in terms of what you've achieved, but clearly the satisfaction and the sense of presence of mind that you have about your business. And I think that really comes across, actually. You have a sense of peace about it, that you may have things you want to change and improve. Who doesn't? If you're running a business, there's always things you can put your finger on and say, well, we need to get better at that, or we need to get better at that. But you know, you seem to be very much in a very good place, which is amazing.
Yeah, and Wendy, I just feel so delighted, because I've read back to some of your early videos on YouTube where you're saying how you got into property, and you're still, you know, looking very excited to have got started. And it really is life-changing. You know, the work that you do, helping people to get started, Nature Modes in particular, with the cash flow plus the equity uplift, it's life-changing. And what it buys you is that ability to be able to choose how you spend your life, that the most vital asset that we have, the most vital resource. And I see that you've been traveling around in your camper van.
And, well, we hired one, because we went to Singapore and Australia for a month in the summer, which was the most amazing trip. Absolutely loved it. And yes, we have our own motorhome, so we decided, why not take a trip up the east coast of Australia and hire a camper van while we were there, which we did. And so we drove from Brisbane all the way up to a place called Airlie Beach, which is near the Whitsunday Islands on the Great Barrier Reef. And we went snorkeling and whale watching, and we had an absolutely fabulous time. And there's no way that a few years ago I could have taken a month out of the business to go and have such a great trip. But I can do that now. And it was amazing. I took my boys with me, and it was truly superb.
Yeah. So that's it. That's what we're doing all this for.
And tell us about your mum. How is your mom? What happened? What happened as a result of that?
Absolutely fabulous. She was absolutely fine, but she did have problems with her knee and a few other things. And what I bought her, I like to take the credit, but I did buy the Fitbit some years ago now. I bought her a Fitbit, and she claimed that she was already walking well in excess of 10,000 steps a day. But, and Nikki and I just looked at each other thinking she's not. Anyway, she made sure that she was. And I don't know if she'd been doing it before, but as soon as we were on this Fitbit chart, she was always well over 10,000. We all were on it together. Then Nikki and I sort of petered off. And mum's now up to 20,000 steps a day. She's in her 70s now. She looks after my gran, who's in her 90s. And she's very well. And the great thing about it is she lives in Birmingham because she's looking after my nan, who doesn't want to move. She's heavily involved. My nan is in her church. But, you know, when things change, my mum will move to Wales and be with us. And we know, you know, things like we can buy somewhere to live and we're comfortable financially. And it's just such a joy. And like you said, Wendy, life does feel so much more joyful because I feel like I've got a purpose. I know what we're like specks of dust in this uniform, universe rather. But I feel like I know what my speck of dust purpose is for now. And I'm very happy in it.
Stephanie, absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much. You've been a great guest. Loved it. Speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.